I don't remember the line. I already forgot. You know, welcome to an episode of What the Batch.
Episode 16, if we're going by your numbering. I was correct last time. Season 2, episode 5.
Great. This is 5 or that was 5?
This is 5. That was 4 because that's 8 episodes or 8 weeks total.
Okay.
And this will be 10 if they were doing 2.
It's the last one for a while. That's what it is.
I'm going to apologize, everyone, in advance. I'm excruciatingly sober right now.
I mean, that's your mistake.
Well, yes, but we're also recording this at a weird time.
But we'll get it out in a timely fashion. So we have a step up on last week. You know, for everyone that was waiting on bated breath last week, they'll have this one earlier. In large part because there were not 2 episodes of Bachelor in Paradise this week. There was one Frankenstein evening of television. And I say that because rather than the typical Monday night edition of Bachelor in Paradise, what aired last night on a Monday night was essentially a Tuesday night episode from this season, which means it was an hour, not even an hour, of actual footage from Mexico, followed by Chris Harrison asking inane questions in studio for roughly 80 minutes.
How bad did they get?
They didn't really... To say that they got bad would imply that they began positive.
Okay, fair.
And they just were bad for the vast majority of the Q&A section. Everything about last night's episode was the most anticlimactic finale that I think could have possibly happened. Last year when Paradise was wrapping up, they had real couples, and I put real in quotation marks, but real in so much as people were getting engaged. There was 3 engagements at the end of Paradise last year out of the final 4 couples.
Okay.
So, I mean, that's a 75% success rate that has now been marked down to one of them still together and married and the other 2, you know, not speaking to one another with a lot of vitriol.
Oh, boy.
But it made for, I think, a compelling finale and an interesting after show because you did have some people going home. The twins decided to leave at the last rose ceremony. They didn't feel like they were going to find love. And there were some other people that realized that going to the fantasy suites was a mistake for them. Namely, you know, Ashley and Wells decided, because Ashley had never slept with anyone before, she didn't have any business going to the fantasy suites.
Wasn't Wells the bartender?
This season, yes. This is
you're recapping another season.
I'm saying, but they framed the whole finale in a sensible way last year where it was, these people have been hanging around, they've been stragglers, but they're not going to, like, leave here as couples. Or if they're going to leave here as couples, they're not going to leave here as engaged couples. And if they're not going to leave here as engaged couples and they shouldn't have sex with each other, that's a whole nother, like, thing that I'm not going to necessarily try to unpack, except for the fact that that's really what the entire beginning of last night's episode was. It was Chris Harrison coming out and chastising a group of 20 to 30-something-year-old individuals and telling them, in a season where that has been marked by an absence of love on every level and an absence of joy, that if their love wasn't genuine enough to succeed in the real world, they should just go home.
Whoa. All right.
And that's marketed of the tone deafness that has been all around this season of Paradise, because that works last year, right? If you have 5 or 6 couples and 4 of them are seriously entertaining the idea of engagement, you can have that kind of frank dialogue with the other 2.
Right. Well, that's a different tone. That's a, you know, really reevaluate or evaluate your relationship kind of a tone, as opposed to, like,
this is like looking at someone that went on one date, another couple that went on like 2 dates and have like made out 3 times. You know, one couple that is barely even real because it's, you know, involves Dean. And telling them, like, hey, decide whether you want to go, you know, fuck in a fantasy suite, because you shouldn't do that if you're not going to leave here as a couple. Which is stupid. I mean, for some of them, yes. For some of them, going in, like, going on a final date and having sex in a fantasy suite or not having sex in a fantasy suite doesn't make sense, because I've known you for 7 minutes and you were dating somebody else on this show right before that. But it's just very, very, it's a very, very, very bizarre way to approach it. And sitting there watching it, I just thought, okay, well, I already know how this is going to go. You know, no one's going to these overnight dates then. Like, none of these couples are strong enough to go to overdinner dates the way that they've now framed what being strong enough is.
Mm-hmm.
But right off the bat, you get Jack Stone, who of all the men in Paradise seems the least likely to go to a fantasy suite with the person that he was with.
Who's?
Scallop Fingers, who is this season's obligatory virgin. So, you know, at least he has the common sense to know that a girl who's made it 26 years without, you know, cashing in her V-card is probably not going to do it on national television with him. And he goes and says to her, but the way that he approaches it is like in pure Jack Stone fashion. Because rather than saying...
Serial killer Jack Stone or porn star Jack Stone?
There was a little bit of both to it.
Okay, go ahead. That's exactly what I would expect.
To me, the thing seemed obvious. You go to Kristen and you say, look, Kristen, I don't think that we should spend the night together in the fantasy suite, but I'd love to go on one final date with you and see where that leads, because you're in Mexico, so why not take advantage of the free dates?
The free dates.
The free dates that are being provided to you.
The free $5 dates.
Yeah, they may also be free for ABC with, you know, beg, borrowing, and stealing. But instead, he tries to pitch her the idea of leaving Paradise together hand in hand.
What?
He's like, let's just decide we're going to be boyfriend and girlfriend.
No.
And hold hands and tell Chris that we're ready to leave and see what this is like in the real world.
What does that accomplish?
It doesn't accomplish very much of anything, because, like, if you think that your relationship's strong enough to survive in the real world, why not go on that final date?
Yeah.
And then either not take the fantasy suite or be bold enough to say, hey, we're going to take it, but we're just not going to do anything in it besides, like, cuddle and talk and get to know one another without the cameras rolling.
Which you could conceivably do anyways, like, make an agreement that there will be no sex?
Yeah, and instead, he just, like, really hard presses this idea, and she's like, I don't want to leave here in a relationship with you, which is a whole different can of worms. Because to her, she's like, we're acquaintances. Like, we're not.
Ooh, hey.
And this doesn't shock me, because they went on one date. She's kissed, like, three other guys since then. You know, had a bunch of scallops.
Wow.
And there was never any point during the course of this season where I thought, man, these two are like a forever couple, which makes Jack's delusional, like, ITMs about, like, looking for marriage and looking for a wife and believing Kristen could be that person after knowing her for all of, you know, 2 days very, very odd.
Was this him trying to win?
But, like, winning is such a abstract term this season, because, like, winning in previous seasons have been like, well, if you got engaged, you won, and then that's proven to be not necessarily true for, you know, most of those couples, but that was the end goal that everyone was working towards. I don't feel like anyone was working towards that goal this year. There was no real, like, couple I'm like, all right, this is what you guys think you're going to be doing in the finale. Now, you know, a couple did get engaged in this finale, so I'm wrong and I'm not, because I don't think that they were working towards that. I think ABC pushed them towards that to get something from this finale. But Jack immediately turns on a dime and goes full serial killer Jack Stone down the beach into an SUV that takes him to the airport, where he can, like,
pouting the whole time. I'm sure.
Pouting the whole time. Kristen, like, the producers convinced her that she should disrobe at this point down to a bathing suit and walk into the ocean like a death sentence. While various ITMs expressed that the scalp was returning to its natural habitat.
What? Who's... Oh, that's so mean.
I don't know if she knew exactly, like, how that was going to be edited and how in on the joke she was about it, considering she's claimed bullying numerous times as the season's aired.
Who are the people who were saying these, like...
I mean, the best one came from Raven. The absolute best one was, like, I won't even try to mimic her voice because it's the greatest thing and my southern accent will be trash fire compared to it, but it's basically Raven being like, the scallop wasn't meant for the dry land. and she now returns to her natural habitat. And as they, like, have Raven saying this, they cut away towards the end of it, and they just watch, they just, like, hold on Kristen being pummeled by a wave.
Like one of the unexpectedly large ones that knocks you down?
Yeah. And then, like, not coming up from underneath the water. As if that was the end. That was the end of Scallop Fingers.
Oh, man. Oh, man, this show.
One by one, they have all of their relationships sort of dissolve in this fashion. It's not a rose ceremony. It's much more like the Nick Viall approach to ending relationships.
It's like, we're done, go home.
Yeah, it's like, sit on a bench and, like, then tell you that I don't think we should do this anymore.
Were some people expecting that to go a different way?
Almost all of them. It's funny because all of the guys basically wanted to continue to Fantasy Suites, which I think is kind of perfect. And none of the women did. So, like, immediately after Scallop Finger says no, Robbie comes to Amanda and makes his, you know, pitch for why they've defied the odds and why he wants to meet her kids and be part of her life and why they should date each other off of the show. And Amanda's just like, that's okay. Like,
was it actually just, that's okay? Is that what she said?
She's such a timid girl that she tries to, like, baby him at first because she doesn't want to hurt his feelings. But eventually she says, like, I need to make positive life choices, and most of my choices on the show and have not been marked by, you know, that.
Well, she's not incorrect.
There's no world in which Amanda could have left the show engaged 2 years in a row. I mean, there is, but she knew that she could not go home and have anyone take her seriously if she did that. So it's not terribly surprising that she ends things with him. And I think her and Robbie were more kind of like a cute, at least the way it was edited, a cute little schoolyard crush. Not necessarily like, I'm going to go sleep with this person now after hanging out with them for like 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And knowing that they slept with like my friend and are best friends with like my ex-fiance. And
who is emotionally abusive. Let's not forget that part.
Yes. So I wasn't, you know, very shocked by that, but Robbie was. He started crying, he stomped off in his board shorts, like one of the 17 pairs he brought to paradise.
Not the one he got on a date?
No, he wasn't the one that got free clothing on the date. I'm sure he would have been really about that. But no, these were the 17 board shorts that were given to him by the companies that he uses his Instagram social media influencer status to promote. Right.
Brand ambassador.
And I'm sure at least some of them were from his own line of clothing that he's launched called Leisureletics.
Could you tell which ones, though?
No. I imagine if I followed him on social media, which I've actively chosen not to, then I would be able to tell that.
He's crushed Wes.
I took a photo of him last week, though.
Like, of him stalkery or with him?
Like, he said, hey, can you take this photo of me and my friends? And I was like, yeah, I guess. So he handed me his phone, and I, like, took a photo of him and his friends.
So you took a photo of him for him?
Yes. I was, like, a professional photographer for a brief and shining moment.
Did you nail it in one?
I gave him 7 options to use, so
That's appropriate social media etiquette.
But what I like is that I'm a stranger to him, right? He definitely doesn't listen to this podcast. But, like, he sought me out at a party that we were at and asked me to take this photo with him and his friends. I lined up to take the photo, and then he looked around and goes, no, this lighting's not good. We're going to move. And had me move with him across the party to a different section where the lighting was better and said, this is where the best photo will be taken. And if I was a different person, I would have probably gotten very upset by that, but I was just so fascinated and thought, like, I would do something similar, but now with a stranger. Like, right. I would have, like, a person that I knew took this photo and then make them walk across the party with me towards, like, the Christmas lights. But, you know.
But you don't have that bachelor fame.
I don't have that bachelor fame, and I guess I'm not a social media influencer yet, so I can't pull these things.
Hey, look, I looked into how you can buy yourself 10,000 followers, and that's apparently the threshold you need to hit.
I mean, if I had 10,000 followers, this podcast would be sponsored by now. We would, like, we would have definite sponsorships from mattress companies and random, like, order to your house wines and probably a wedding registry.
I know it's going to be mod cloth. What are the other ones I'm constantly hearing?
I mean, Zola sponsors about half the podcast I listen to. But what I will say, and if anyone from Zola is listening, I actually used Zola for the first time last week to buy a wedding registry gift for a friend of mine. And it was wonderful. Like, I didn't want to just buy a cooking pan because she doesn't cook. So I was able to buy something for her honeymoon instead. Like, you can buy pieces of the honeymoon.
Oh, I've seen those. I didn't know what Zola was until you just explained it, but I've definitely used that where you can give like $25 for a drink or something like that.
They're going to Croatia. I bought them a walking tour.
That's nice.
I wouldn't want to go on a walking tour, but that was a thing that they had specifically put on their Zola registry. So I was like, oh, okay, enjoy walking and think of all the walking I won't do while you're doing it. Anyway, back to Paradise. See, like, it's like we have sponsors, but no one's paying us. This is beautiful. The rest of the couples, Diggy, for whatever reason, decided to tell Dominique he wanted to end things, but then after knowing Jamie for all of 12 hours, asked her if she wanted to continue to the overnight date, which I don't get that strategy. I guess he thought, like,
Does that qualify as a strategy?
I think he thought he made a more instantaneous connection with Jamie and, like, maybe they could pursue something. It was sad because Dominique was, like, ready to go and pursue something with him. And Jamie was like, nah, I'm good. Like, I've known you for 12 hours. Like, we're friends-ish.
We'll be friendly.
So, Diggy's paradise dreams went up in flames. But he got much further in this show than I think I expected him to, so... and he gave so much great side eye.
And for what sense? To who?
He just has the best reaction shots, and like, there's been so many gifs made of just him reacting to numerous different things. My favorite, I think, is him reacting to like Blake E entering the house last week, though, because he hugs him and then looks at the camera like full on Jim Halpern style, and rolls his eyes about having to say hello to Blake. Tickle Monster knows that there's no world in which Jasmine's going to go to Fantasy Suites with him. So that's a very quick and decisive, let's just be friends. And she's like, yeah, that's really all we are. Like, we kept each other here so that we could be on television for an extra 2 weeks. And, you know, now we'll part ways. D'Lo and Dean have things to sort out. Because D'Lo believes that they can progress to Fantasy Suites and really express their feelings for one another now that Christina is gone. And Dean does not feel that way.
Okay.
Dean's had a revelation.
Oh, did he realize that one of them, he let one go?
He realized that in seeing Christina leave Paradise, he was in love with her. And this has really hung over his head for the last 24 hours. So he tells D'Lo that he cannot go to the Fantasy Suites with her and he cannot date her outside of the show, that he's in love with Christina and he needs to chase that down. A producer asked him what he would say to her if she was there. And I was like, wait, is she still there? But no. I got, for a moment, I was like very excited. I'm like, this would be a very like twisty ending. No twist. He just like gets in a limo and goes home and, you know, presumably off to find Christina in the middle of Lexington, Kentucky, leaving D'Lo to question what a waste of time Paradise was for her. The remaining three couples have all progressed enough that they're going to go to Fantasy Suites. And I say that...
Don't stop, get it.
I say that knowing that two of them probably should have done that, and the third of them should not have.
Okay.
Now, people listening to this who have already seen the finale will say hindsight is 20/20, and that I'm saying it because of the way that they react in the hot seat during the after portion of the show. But it's important to know that this is where the show decides to stupidly cut off.
Episode's done?
The three of them go, oh, we're going to go to Fantasy Suites, and then it pulls up on Chris Harrison in studio being like, we got all your favorites here in the studio with me, and we're going to find out what happened in the Fantasy Suites. And that's, they Frankensteined the after show into what the actual show was, rather than, like, even bringing it to a natural finale, because, and this is, again, the difference between last year. Last year, they went to these overnight suites. They thought about whether they wanted to get engaged. Then they had an actual, like, altar scene, just like they do on Bachelorette or Bachelor, where they're, like, at a fancy, like, villa getting down on one knee. And this year, the producers didn't think anyone was going to get engaged and didn't even want to try to push that. So it just was like, oh, you have your fantasy suite and then you go home and we'll come back in 2 months and let Chris Harrison recap it.
It seems like a bad idea.
It is. And it also made you wait because then you know, Daniel and Lacey have gone off to whatever, you know, Adam and Raven have gone off to whatever, and you know that Taylor and Derek have gone. But before you get to any of that, Kristen wants to recap all of the other couples that have gone nowhere. But even the way that they approach that is really weird. So they come up and a fair amount of them are already in studio. And there's people that should be in studio because they weren't enough of a narrative that they're going to spend time in the hot seat. So the twins, right? They were in one episode. Sure. They're there just because they're there to provide
a very specific service that they do well.
Their commentary. Like, they're there to basically do their ITMs, but from a seat opposite Chris Harrison in a studio.
But also, doesn't this not make really logistical sense? Because, narratively speaking, you want to know what they decide in the moment, you know, at when they are in the suites. This is being filmed so far after that if they've broken up, which I'm assuming most of them have, it doesn't carry the same emotional weight.
Exactly. There's a reason that things call an after show.
Right.
And to begin with, like, it should come after the show. So what you should show me is what happened
on the show
in their final dates, their three final dates, what the morning after was like, and find some sort of an appropriate segue that acknowledges that every in-studio thing that we've had to endure this season occurred during those 2 months. So it's not like the first time that these people have seen each other in 2 months. They've seen each other every time you've dragged them back out to do one of these things. So they don't acknowledge any of that. Instead, it's like they briefly try to engage in Chris Harrison mending fences between Jasmine and Scallop Fingers. He realizes that's not going to happen because she really believes she was bullied, and Jasmine does not think for a second that she bullied her.
Okay.
And Jasmine wants to continue this fight. Like, she's like, no, let's talk about this. Like, I'm not going to let people label me a bully when she's going and liking and retweeting people saying bad things about me and D'Lo and the way that we treat her when we just don't talk to her. Like, that's how we treat her. She's not our friend. She's a person that we do television shows with. Like, that's what our relationship with Scallop Fingers is.
She keep calling her Scallop Fingers.
She calls her Scallops. And then Chris is like, well, let's just deep dive. Let's figure out where the scallop thing came from.
Is this a really deep dive?
And it's not a deep dive because they showed Alexis telling the story on the show, but it's an excuse for Alexis to say, I never knew that it was going to grow to these proportions. I was a victim of the scallop fingers.
What?
But, you know, I thought it was funny. I didn't mean it in a malicious way. I think it's really weird and sort of funny that this girl was, like, eating leftover scallops in a car and wiping her fingers on me. I didn't think it was funny in the moment because you don't want anyone to wipe their fingers on you, but
yeah, that's why it wasn't funny in the moment.
But in retrospect, like, I kind of got a kick out of it. And even Kristen admits at this point, like, she's kind of embraced the name and she thinks it's funny. So I don't understand how she thinks she was bullied then. But this is Chris Harrison.
He's going to get to the bottom of things.
Who doesn't know how to ask the hard questions and thus just ends the conversation with them there. Now, it's possible that this conversation kept going because at least one or two of the more that I'll discuss here did keep going and then they just edited around them. But it really did seem like that was the end of that one.
Okay.
He shifts to Dean, D'Lo, and Christina at that point.
Oh, boy.
And he did a worse job attacking that than Ellen had done yesterday morning. So yet again, this franchise.
So wait, they were coming on to do this after show and they did the same interview with someone else?
Yes.
How does that make sense?
This is what I'm talking about with the show undermining itself. It's like sending Corinne to Good Morning America the day that she was doing her tell-all with Chris that night. They had the first conversation with Dean, D'Lo, and Christina since the show, but they taped this fake after, like, live after show 2 weeks ago. Or, no, they taped it 10 days ago, something like that. So yesterday, Christina, D'Lo, and Dean were actually on Ellen, and it aired at, like, 4 p.m. in most sections of the country, which is six solid hours
before,
or five solid hours before it aired as part of the wrap-up on Bachelor in Paradise.
How does any of this make any kind of sense?
It doesn't make any sense, even remotely. But, like, worse than that is, like, Ellen didn't really do a deep dive and yet somehow managed to get deeper into, like, things than Chris did. And I think that they have to have cut around. Like, I have to believe that in this particular instance, it may be less Chris and more editing.
Okay.
But if you're going to spend as much time this season on that love triangle as the show did,
right.
I care more about that in an after show than I do anything about scallop fingers or Robbie and Amanda. Really, I care about that more than Taylor and Derek, even though they were the couple that were supposed to fall in love with as they were falling in love with each other, because they didn't get enough screen time for me to feel emotionally invested in their relationship. So
it also feels like they were the only ones who were actually, like, making the TV, this threesome,
yeah.
Dean,
D'Lo, and Christina. And they don't really give it the time that it deserves. It gets about 5 minutes.
Huh.
He brings Dean to the hot seat, and the girls stay seated where they are. They don't even sit next to him. He doesn't bring either of them up individually. Dean is very apologetic. He tries to say that he made real mistakes, and he's been able to see, like, as he watched the footage back, just how awful he looked. And, you know, to his credit, he definitely seems contrite. When the audience boos D'Lo, he's very quick to be like, you shouldn't be booing her, and these two girls should have no fights with one another. Like, all of their grievances should be with me. Like,
I agree with that.
The way I handled things was very incorrect. And he looks like he's going to throw up the vast majority of this. And then Chris kind of goes to both of the women. And, Dean doesn't really look great. Even he kind of redeems himself for 2 seconds before D'Lo says to him, you're walking back from the truth even now.
I'm intrigued. Go on.
She's like, because you told me all these things on camera about how you had to go find Christina and you had to go, like, amend your issues. And then 5 hours later, when they had us both in a hotel room in Mexico waiting to fly us back to the States, you called me and asked to come over and spend the night, which you did.
What?
And now, for the first time, and this is why, like, the way that they chopped it, but it seemed like for the first time, Christina and D'Lo were on a united front. Where,
right.
Like, because Christina goes, now, careful, Dean. You know, because what you said next is going to potentially incriminate you worse than anything you've said on the show so far.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm like, this is the show. This is the after show. Why are we, like, racing through this?
Why are we dealing with all the rest of the bullshit?
And why are they not in the hot seat, like, actually, like, sitting next to Chris? Why are they on the other side of the stage? It just didn't make a ton of sense. Dean admitted, basically, that he did do that. And that night went further than he expected it to. And then when they got back to Los Angeles, Christina wouldn't speak to him because she was still so upset about everything that happened on the show. So he figured he might as well hang out with D'Lo because she was speaking to him.
Wow.
And then Christina's like, yeah, but then I tried to reach back out to you. And he's like, yeah, and then I stopped speaking to D'Lo. So
what a trash fire of a human being.
I get what his logic here is. In a weird way, I think the logic off of the show, minus calling her 5 hours after they wrap filming, makes sense. I wonder if he tried to call Christina and she, like, just didn't answer the phone or told him she didn't want to speak to him, and then he called D'Lo. But that's the thing that you should be asking if you're Chris Harrison, and
right.
He's not. Because objectively speaking, if you come off the show, you trace down Christina, she tells you, I'm not going to speak to you. I have no interest in dating you off of this show. The way that you treated me was, like, completely inappropriate. Mm-hmm. And then you come back to Los Angeles, where you live and D'Lo lives, and she's like, I still want to hang out. Like, I'm not completely out based on the fact that you
are a giant fuckboy.
That you had to go finish whatever was happening there. Like, you had to go chase that down. You realize it's over. I'm here. I get why you'd be like, okay, well, I'll try this. But if you really thought that Christina was your, like, forever person, and she comes back all of a sudden, it doesn't seem like at any point he was actually juggling both of them. It seems like he just went...
No, he was just very mercenary.
He just ping-ponged back and forth. So, in that regard, it's less fuckboy than I've been nailing him to the wall for all season, because he really was trying to do both at the same time in Paradise, and I guess the way he wasn't after the show. But the funny thing is, like, I don't know whether Chris asked if they could ever see a future with him, because we weren't shown that. Like, mm-hmm. they just kind of go to commercial and don't really come back to it. But on Ellen actually asks Christina straight up. He seems contrite. He seems to have understood the mistakes he's made. Mm-hmm. He's very, very willing to take responsibility. Like, could you see yourself dating him again?
And what'd she say?
And she was like, if I really thought that he'd learned his lessons and that he was ready for an adult relationship, then potentially. She doesn't ask D'Lo that question, or, again, maybe she does, but they just don't, out, yeah. they don't show it. But I kind of feel bad for D'Lo, both at the after show and in Ellen, because it felt like she didn't get into word in edgewise. Mm-hmm. Like, she was very much labeled, like, the other woman.
Right.
Because the narrative had been, like, Dean and Christina are this ultimate love story. She's trying to combat that. She posted a very long Instagram post today, like 4 paragraphs long, talking about how her and Dean's relationship was way more real than people give it credit for, with a photo of her and Dean making out.
Okay.
And
that's one way to go.
So, I have so many questions. But Dean told Ellen... that he felt like he had real growing up to do before he was going to be worthy of dating Christina, and that he was just very unhappy with his actions and the way things had gone down. So he needed to do personal growth and, like, reflection before he was ready to date anyone.
I mean, can't disagree with that.
And that's a more satisfying end to that narrative for now than what the actual show provided.
Mm-hmm.
It just... Which was nothing. It was just like, okay, Dean, we get that you're contrite. We're going to go to commercial break and come back.
Cool, guys.
And upon returning, they're like, let's drag Robbie and Amanda out. I'm like, aren't we done with Robbie and Amanda? Like, she told him to go home. He cried. He walked off in his board shorts. Why are they sitting in the hot seat? And the reason they're sitting in the hot seat is, as I mentioned last week, because Robbie cheated on her. They tried to date post-show. He cheated on her. And they want to drag him. That's really what it was.
Oh, is this the person who was at the, whatchamacallit? And took a picture.
Yes. He went to a Zac Brown Band concert in Colorado or something and was with an ex-girlfriend making out, and a girl took photos of it.
Classy.
He denies it.
Aren't there photos?
Well.
Did he trip and fall into her lips?
He says, yes, we're very close in the photos, but you can't really tell that we're kissing, and it's because we're not kissing. And... the twins are there to serve their function, which is yelling from their seats like, we have receipts, Robbie. We've seen these photos. You're absolutely making out with this girl. And even if you're not making out with this girl, you're, like, on the verge of making out with this girl. So...
I'm looking at the photos now.
You know, we're here to stand up for our friend. And Amanda's like, oh, that's so sweet of you guys. Like, thank you for being here. Because that's Amanda. Like, she won't drag him even when ABC's like, hey, please drag him.
So why were the twins so invested in dragging him? Did she ask?
I mean, they just are basically... they're so very protective of Amanda because they know that she's very... she's entirely too willing to, like, let people get away with things. Uh-huh. And they're just not. That's not on brand for them. It's cute. Their friendship's very cute. And Robbie, again, if you watch the show and you just watch the show and you don't deep dive in the way that I do and, like, live, breathe all of the social media stuff, you're missing out on so much because these contestants live or die by social media. Dean cracked me up last night. He said to Chris Harrison, I had to unfollow Christina on all of social media because it hurt my heart too much to see her face.
okay, dude.
Like, that's how they live or die. They live or die by these platforms. And Robbie gets off of the... I mean, they filmed this again. They filmed it, like, 7 days ago, 10 days, or something like that. But he gets off of the show last night, or the show ends, and he puts out this very long tweet about how people shouldn't need to, like, preserve good girl personas. They should be their true self and not try to, like, take people like him through the ringer.
So he's saying he's a nice guy.
He's saying he's a nice guy. He's saying that Amanda's trying to be, is the fake one in this equation, that he would have never cheated, and that even in casual relationships, he's never cheated. At which point, Amanda, who had been holding on to the photo and not put it out, immediately tweeted the photo and was like, look what you made me do. So, you know, getting that Taylor Swift reference in there.
I'm trying to pull up this photo. I mean, so that we can judge ourselves.
I've seen, if you go to Reality Steve's website, he posted not only that photo, but he had been sent 3 photos and a video from that night in Colorado by the same person that, like, reached out to Amanda. And he'd been like, yeah, I'm not going to post them. But once Amanda let one go, he was like, fuck it, let's go.
Here's the rest.
Like, here's the rest of them. It doesn't look like they're kissing. It looks like they've either just finished kissing or they're 30 seconds away from kissing. But they're all over each other. He's, like, got his arms around her. He's got his, you know, his neck nuzzled against her. Her face nuzzled against her neck. So it's going to be...
James Robbie, right?
Yeah. It's going to be towards the top there. Yeah.
This?
Yeah. And then I think probably the third page, if it breaks it up to pages on your phone the way it breaks it up to pages on the internet. But it definitely looks like he's cheating on her.
Twitter asked me what's happening. No, I don't.
That's his, yeah, so that's his impassioned thing that he wrote about. But the funny thing is that he wrote his...
This?
Yes.
Oh, that's not being friendly.
No, it's not being friendly.
Doesn't even being friendly a little bit. It does, in fact, look like their faces would be smooshed together.
Yeah.
In a very uncomfortable way if you're not kissing.
I believe he cheated. To be clear, there's no doubt in my mind that he did cheat.
Okay, no, I'm just... The ridiculous thing is trying to claim that these were just friends. Like, I'm looking at the rest of them now. Oh, honey, no. Get better at lying. Or don't cheat. You know, that's an odd do.
It doesn't make sense to be that vehement, because he knew the photos existed. He'd seen the photos, too. He knew that they were going to come out. I don't really get what he was banking on here, but this is the same man who... dumped his girlfriend to go on JoJo's season of The Bachelorette to begin with, like his long-term girlfriend, because he wanted social media influencer status, and, you know, I guess he's reached that, so good for him.
With life goal accomplished.
Somewhere along the way, we revisit Corinne and DeMario. I don't really want to talk about that, so all I'm going to say is that Chris Harrison was like, this is the moment you've all been waiting for, and if you're the only...
No one is waiting for this moment.
Yeah.
No one.
If you're like the one of 7 people who watched the show last night have been waiting for that moment the whole season, you and I probably would not be friends in real life. That's all I'm going to say about that. Once that is all out of the way, we move into the actual final 3 couples. And the way that the show decides to approach that is by bringing them out one by one and then showing their overnight date and then coming back to them in studio. It's an illogical strategy. It's something that they kind of tried to do on Rachel's finale, but they did with a little bit more tact than I think they did here. So Daniel and Lacey, who are not a real couple, they're 2 people that had sex before they came on the show.
And continued on the show?
And then then he wanted to have sex with her more on the show, and she didn't really want to do it on camera, so they didn't really do it on camera, but then you can do it in the fantasy suites. Poor sweet Lacey was very convinced that this was heading towards a real relationship. And I think her thought process there was, Daniel's a 32-year-old man, so he's going to want to settle down. Which, those 2 things are not necessarily congruent. Like, you can be 32 and have no interest in settling down, and I think
true.
Daniel doesn't even pretend that he does. When she asks him during their final date, and here's the important thing. These 3 final dates are not... ABC has given up.
just thrown in the towel. This is the ghost of dates past.
As much as I've made fun of the dates on this show this season, their dates this year are, hey, we're going to put out some tapas in the living room of your hotel room. And then if you want to go to the bedroom afterwards to bang, you can do that and the camera crew will leave.
What a half-assed thing.
So in that respect, maybe Jack Stone had the right mindset to be like, we should just like not go on this final date and go back. He just, you know, picked the wrong woman who didn't want to do that with him. They also spend like zero time on the date or what these people talked about. So they might have had meaningful conversations they might not have, but in terms of building a narrative, or yet again,
showing us a connection between the two of them.
Yet again, they don't. They show Lacey telling Daniel that she thinks she's falling in love with him, and he's like, oh yeah, I could definitely be falling in love with you.
That's an equivocation upon an equivocation right there.
And she's like, wait, really? Like, because I think we should leave the show and be a couple. He's like Facebook official couple? Which for a 32-year-old man to ask is...
That's hilarious and sad.
Yeah, but you also, if you're Lacey, you should sit back in that moment and go, oh.
I've instantly reevaluated what I just said.
And instead she goes and she sleeps with him, which... It's her prerogative, and she's done it before, so...
He's so lucky.
But they come back to her in the studio, and she's like, yeah, I made a mistake, and then he didn't want to date me off the show, and he didn't even waste time telling me that. And Chris is like, what do you mean? And she's like, yeah, the next morning. Like...
What?
The next morning he told me, I really think you got this all wrong. Like, I live in Toronto? Toronto or Vancouver? He lives somewhere in Canada. And you live in New York. I think it's Toronto. But, like, you live in New York, and so, like, we don't live that close to one another, and we're not going to be able to see each other every day, so we should keep talking. But I think to say, oh, we're going to go be exclusive off of this show is an unreasonable expectation. And she's like, you told me that you loved me last night. And he's like, I told you I was maybe sort of falling for you, but now, like, with the benefit of sleep, I'm like,
We have had the sex, and I have decided no.
Daniel's funny because he's not like Rob.
Take a move. Was he there?
So they bring him out to join her on the couch.
He just had to say for himself.
And defend himself. And I don't think Daniel realized that Chris Harrison and the Bachelor team were going to like pull footage. So he tries to be like, look, I never said I was in love with you. Now, they don't let him get away with this, and my counter-argument is, Rachel got away with that with four different guys.
Yeah, but she was the lead of your show. You're not going to assassinate her like that.
Sure, but if they were going to let her get away with that, it's very sort of double standard-y to like be like, no, Daniel, you can't use the semantics that she used for an entire season.
I mean, to be clear... It's shitty to do that to anyone, but from their perspective, they're not gonna.
They wanted to like
not gonna tank their lead versus whoever this guy is.
Yeah, they just wanted to pull the video of him telling a producer the following morning, and basically they don't have him on camera, but they had his mic was on, so they show a closed door and presumably him and the producer are behind the closed door, and he's immediately saying to the producer, "I really regret the things that I said last night. I think they were a mistake. I think she has stronger feelings than I do, and I don't really know how to, like, pull back from this now." They wanted us to look at that and go, man, Lacey's such, like, the champion here, and Daniel's terrible. I was like, he had buyer's remorse. Like, he, like, freaked out the same way.
What a gross phrase to use in this context, Wes.
I'll stand by it. He spent the night with her and realized how serious she was. And I'm sure that he did go tell her, like, yeah, some of this I feel like was the bubble. It was the Bachelor bubble. It was being on television. It was, you know, being in a romantic setting. And I just don't know if it works in the real world.
But has he rejoined the real world yet?
Yeah. I mean, they've been in the real world for 2 months. And I guess they saw each other.
Well, no, I mean, this footage that they
this
showed.
Was the next morning as he was realizing that they were about to go back to the real world. And when he started to actually think about it, he... Now, you know, Chris warned them that they should think about this before they went to the overnight dates.
In no uncertain terms.
So, it's really Daniel's fault because he didn't listen to authoritarian and sometimes marriage counselor Chris Harrison.
See, this is what happens when you don't live your life by Harrison's rules.
He he tries to say that he wanted to spend time with Lacey off of the show, and that she didn't want to do that, and that he invited her to come to Canada, and this is where he makes his mistake, because he could have just let the footage speak for itself, and he could have defensively been like, I got swept up, and very quickly I realized that I'd gone too far, and rather than try to go back to separate cities and preserve something, and then 3 weeks later be like, no, I'm not feeling it, I thought maybe it was easier to just kind of cut it off there. That's what he should have done. Instead, he goes, you know, I invited you to Canada, and Lacey's like, oh, we're gonna tell this story. And if a girl says, oh, we're going to tell this story,
Danger Will Robinson.
I wasn't planning to tell the story on national television. You know the story's going to be A+. So basically the story is that Daniel came to New York for 6 days and only saw her for 1 hour during the 6 days that he was in New York.
Oh, what a dick move.
And then after that 1 hour, was like, I'm headed back to Canada, but you should definitely fly up and hang out if you want.
That's not an invitation.
And then...
it's a brush off.
He followed back up with her via text, and she was like, no, I'm not coming to Canada, because why would I come to Canada?
Yeah. What an empty offer.
That you can't come back from. Like, that... So, basically, that's where they end that dialogue between the two of them. They go to commercial again. They come back. We see the end of Adam and Raven's relationship in Paradise, which is Raven being incredibly nervous about going to the fantasy suites. She says she's done it before. She doesn't know if she should do it again. I laugh throughout all of this because we spent so much time on Nick's season with Raven establishing that she'd never had an orgasm via sex. And then they put together the truly absurd montage after her fantasy suite that strongly insinuated that, like, Nick had finally given her that. Only for Nick to be like, we didn't have sex in the fantasy suite, which entirely undermines their montage. So, you know, with that armed, you'd think that they would try to maybe drag some of that back up here, and they just don't, which might be indicative of Raven being in charge of her own narrative this season and being the true Queen of Paradise. And in true Queen of Paradise fashion, she does go, she spends the night with Adam, she seems very happy after the night with Adam, we cut back to them in the studio, they are holding hands, they are very much still a couple.
Okay.
They've been traveling for the last 2 months. They're...
Do you want to ask the question?
What's the question?
The orgasm question?
No, and I wish they had. See, this is the these are the hard-hitting questions that Chris doesn't tackle. Because I want to know, they show her, like, the next morning, all smiley, being like, I'm really glad I stayed with Adam. This was a really good experience. And I'm like, really good? Like, you... This makes me more convinced that you finally had an orgasm than the stupid montage in Nick's season. Because you just look happy. You look genuinely happy that you, like, spent the night with him. Like, yeah, this was a good couple hours of time. No one asked that question because they don't rehash any of that. They seemingly forget that that was a narrative they spent so much time on, you know, 6 months ago. Instead, the question that Chris asks is, have you met each other's parents yet?
The one question that's on everybody's mind.
And Raven says that, you know, Adam's going to meet her parent. She's going to meet Adam's parents this weekend. And Chris is like, yeah, but when is Adam going to meet your parents? And Raven goes, I don't know. How about right now? Which is a real Queen of Paradise move.
Okay.
And then proceeds to bring her parents out and introduce them to Adam live on stage. And Adam looks straight terrified. And I don't blame him, because that's not how I would want to meet somebody's parents.
That's not how you play. That's mean.
After dating somebody for 3 months, give or take, I wouldn't really want to meet their parents.
On national TV in front of everyone?
Yeah, national TV. But thankfully, ABC cuts right to commercial as this is happening. So even if it was horrifying for Adam and her parents decided that they don't like him, we'll never know. Because they didn't show it. So... this brings us to the last couple. There's not much to say about them. They're incredibly boring. They've gotten next to no screen time, despite being the couple we were encouraged to root for. That's Taylor and Derek.
They're names that you've said before.
She's the emotionally IQ one.
Yep.
And he's the guy that's been dating her. Okay. That's the most noteworthy thing. He kind of looks like...
I'm real disappointed Taylor isn't also a dude.
Yeah, no, she looks like John Krasinski. I mean, he looks like John Krasinski. That would be more...
That was a good segue right there. Like it?
That's the most notable thing about him. They are still going strong after Paradise, unsurprisingly. More surprisingly, I had assumed that they had been having sex the entire time that Paradise was filming, because every time we didn't see them with...
He just disappeared and wandered off.
Every time we didn't see them with the rest of the cast, I was like, you're off in a bungalow somewhere banging. And, like, I respect that, because if I was getting a free 2 weeks in Mexico, I would also only come up for, like, food, air, and tanning. If I was with somebody that I really wanted to be constantly having sex with. That's what a honeymoon is. They're, like, basically getting a free pre-honeymoon. But I guess no, because there's no hesitancy in their clip package about going to the honeymoon suite or going to the fantasy suite. There's just kind of, like, excitement. And Taylor says things sometimes, like, only she experiences these emotions or feelings, which I guess is a commentary back to her emotional IQ. Mm-hmm. But she's like, I just value sex a lot, and I know that that's the next step in a relation, in this relationship. That's for everyone. That's not a you thing. Like, it's
not everybody. Not everybody wants to have sex, but people who want to have sex.
No, on this show, having sex with somebody in the fantasy suite is the next step. Right? Like, that's... The bigger surprise here, Taylor, is that you haven't done it to this point, not that you're going to do it now that you're there. I would be very confused if after 2 weeks of professing your love for this person, you didn't sleep with him in the fantasy suite, because what are you doing then? The next morning, she makes what she thinks is an astoundingly funny joke about how she's truly experienced all of him now. It's the obvious sex joke, and she makes it, and she thinks it's funnier than it actually is. I'm sure he's very proud of it, because it makes him seem particularly well endowed, and you get a cutaway of him smiling. They're cute as a couple. I mean, I don't care about them, because I didn't really care about her on Nick's season, and this show did nothing to make me care about her more. Like, it did nothing to really shape the narrative where I need to help Taylor find love, or I want Taylor to find love.
Right. You're not rooting for those crazy kids.
And with Derek, I didn't really watch enough of his season to remember him. So he just is someone that was on the show, and, you know, I'm glad that, you know, he found someone too. Now, here's the thing. I think ABC did push them into getting engaged, which makes the end of the episode particularly silly. He starts to say all the things that he loves about her, and he does seem entirely genuine. But I had heard that there was an engagement happening on this finale a month ago.
Okay.
Like a solid 3 weeks before it taped.
Sure.
And then I read in a couple different outlets that ABC was promoting, and that the producers were telling people there would be a proposal. So that level of, like, bullishness and sheer confidence suggests that they were standing over Derek's shoulder, like, you need to propose.
Yeah.
Which is fine. It, you know, maybe these people, this cast is all better actors than I gave them credit for, though, because Taylor seems completely surprised by the proposal. Like, she had no idea it was coming. And all of the girls that are standing or sitting in the dais or whatever all start to freak out when they realize where, like, Derek's speech is headed. It's a very nice speech. I don't think this couple will work, but maybe they're, like, boring enough that they'll counteract one another and just be like like a very boring couple that goes forever and ever.
They never stop.
I just find myself being cynical with regards to this, because he was dating another girl from the franchise and broke up with her because he didn't want to date anyone from the franchise, and then turned around and did Paradise, the whole idea of which is to date somebody from the franchise, and now he's engaged to somebody from the franchise. So, we'll see. In the moment, they seem very, very happy. I guess in the larger scheme of couples out of Paradise, I take them getting married way more than I would have taken Grant and Lace last year, or than I would have taken Josh and Amanda. I probably would have taken them more likely to actually get married than Evan and Carly, but Evan and Carly immediately off of their show proved, like, oh, we're a real couple. whereas on the show they were a joke. So they're better than last year's couples, but they're no Jade and Tanner, and no one will be. And so, in the most fitting way, Chris signs off for this season by complimenting Jade and Tanner on the birth of their child, albeit several weeks late.
Yes, we've had this conversation.
Yes. But that's like, that feels like the right way to end a season of Paradise, by being like, yeah, this season, eh, not great. But 2 years ago, you guys, Jade and Tanner.
Man, could we have a show for you 2 years ago?
And with that, we now go on a Bachelor hiatus of sorts until January, when there will be two shows. Two shows at once, in all likelihood. There will be the ridiculous Ari Leidendijk season of The Bachelor, which I am not looking forward to. And much more importantly, Bachelor Winter Games, which I still know nothing about. And I don't think anyone in the franchise knows what it is yet. They do know they're shooting in Vermont, and only that.
All right. Are we covering both of those things? Is that your plan?
I mean, I guess it's, we're going to have to see. We're going to have to see how they end up scheduling them, because I'm very interested. Like, ABC pretty much does reality just Monday nights.
Mm-hmm.
So will they run 2 hours of Bachelor into an hour of Bachelor Winter Games, or will they try to move Bachelor Winter Games to a different night, or will they slide the premiere of Bachelor, which I don't think they'll do, or will they run Winter Games opposite, well, like, out of winter? Like, if Bachelor runs January, February, would they run Winter Games in March and then debut Bachelorette in April? They've made no comment on it yet. There is an actual Olympics happening this year, a Winter Olympics,
right?
Which is what inspired the Bachelor Winter Games. So
oh, dear Lord.
So I do question if they just don't want to burn actual Bachelor against the Olympics, and so what they'll try to do is burn Winter Games against it. Which is just basically saying Winter Games is cannon fodder. I don't know. I'm very, very fascinated. I will happily ingest Winter Games when it happens, and I will begrudgingly watch Ari's season of The Bachelor, because I just, no. It shouldn't be him. It should still be Eric. Or anyone. Really anyone that's been on this show more recently than 5 years ago.
You know, you could probably give me updates as if Eric were The Bachelor, and I would not know the difference.
Oh, I'm sure you would. but yeah, and then the other thing to account is, like, you know, if I'm cast on The Bachelorette.
What are we going to do? Am I going to have to start recapping this for people?
I will actually be filming as The Bachelor is airing, so, like,
I'm going to recap for people. I actually do have a solution if we ever need to fill in the gaps of this. I know exactly what I'm going to recap for you.
I mean, the true culmination of all of this, the true, like, leveling up of this podcast, yes, we've talked about getting sponsors, yes, we've talked about getting guests, but when we know we'll have, like, hit the prime evolutionary level of the What the Bash podcast is once I have gone filmed The Bachelorette and then returned to the podcast
triumphant
and recap my own episodes as a cast member. That is when we'll have, like, really, really leveled up, because then it'll just be saying great things about myself every week and how wonderful I am.
At that point, I'm just gonna rename this podcast What the Aura. We're done.
But until January, our intro music is Biking in the Park by Lee Rose Aver.
And the outro is Already There by Josh Woodward.
Please follow me on Twitter, at I Am Wesley.
You can follow me on Twitter if you want. It's at Alexa. Hit us up if you need us to sponsor your stuff. We're real good at it.